Ever wondered when an oil and gas lease actually ends? Like, is it as straightforward as it might seem?
Yeah, that's a great question.
It's not always so simple.
No, not at all. Especially when you dig into a case like the one we're looking at today, Stewart v. Amerada Hess Corp.
Okay, so Stewart v. Amerada Hess Corp. A pivotal Oklahoma Supreme Court case, right?
Absolutely, pivotal.
This decision really reshaped how we think about profitability in the oil and gas world, and it still has a huge impact on lease agreements today.
If you're thinking about specializing in oil and gas law, you really need to understand this case.
For sure. So today, we are diving deep
Deep dive.
into Stewart v. Amerada Hess Corp. And the core question is, what does production in paying quantities actually mean? And how did something as, well, seemingly boring as depreciation cause such a big legal fight?
Right. You wouldn't think depreciation would be the spark for a major legal battle, but it definitely was.
So we're going to unpack the facts of the case, look at both sides of the argument, and pull out the key takeaways.
The stuff that every aspiring energy lawyer needs to know.
Exactly.
All right, so the case decided by the Oklahoma Supreme Court back in 1979, it all revolved around an oil and gas lease held by Amerada Hess. This lease had what's called a habendum clause, which basically sets out an initial term and then a thereafter clause.
Okay, so the lease has a set time period, and then this thereafter clause kicks in.
Yeah, exactly. The thereafter clause lets the lease continue as long as there's oil or gas production that's profitable in paying quantities, legally speaking.
And that thereafter clause, that's where a lot of legal battles happen, right? It's not just about producing something, it's about making money.
Exactly. And in this case, the original landowners had entered into another lease, this time with Rodman Corporation, while Amerada Hess still held the old lease, actually. They'd assigned part of it to Union Texas Petroleum.
So we have overlapping leases here.
Yes, and a working well. The question was, had Amerada Hess's original lease already ended because, as this new lessee claimed, the production wasn't profitable anymore?
Competing claims for the same mineral rights. That makes determining who actually holds the valid lease super important. And the key to that.
You got it. Production and paying quantities.
Got it. So this case went through the Oklahoma courts, and there were some different opinions along the way, right?
Right. The trial court initially sided with Amerada Hess, saying their lease was still good.
Okay.
But then the Court of Appeals reversed that decision.
Interesting. Why did they overturn the trial court's ruling?
Well, this is where it gets interesting. The Court of Appeals really dug into the financials of the oil and gas production. They considered whether the equipment used in production was losing value, depreciating, and if that should be seen as an operating cost when figuring out the well's profitability.
They were looking at the big picture, not just the immediate cash flow.
Yeah. And their conclusion, well, if you included depreciation, Amerada Hess was actually operating at a loss for a couple of years, 72 and 73.
Ah, so this seemingly minor accounting concept, depreciation, suddenly becomes a major factor. Can you break down what depreciation means in this situation for those of us who might not be accounting whizzes?
Sure. Think about all the machinery you need to get oil and gas out of the ground.
Well,
Pumps, pipelines, storage tanks, the whole works.
right. Big, expensive equipment.
Exactly. And that equipment, it doesn't last forever. It gets worn down, it gets old, technology changes. It basically loses value over time. And that decrease in value, that's what we call depreciation.
It's like a car. The more miles you put on it, the less it's worth, even if you take good care of it.
Perfect analogy. And the Court of Appeals basically said, hey, this wear and tear on the equipment is a real cost of production. You have to consider it when you're figuring out if the operation is actually making a profit.
So they're saying you can't just look at the money coming in versus the day-to-day expenses. You have to factor in the fact that your equipment is gradually becoming less valuable.
Precisely.
So this sets the stage for the big question that the Oklahoma Supreme Court had to answer.
The big question: should depreciation of the equipment be counted as an operating cost when you're figuring out if a lease is producing in paying quantities?
And the answer to that question could have massive implications for the oil and gas industry, right?
Huge implications. I mean, if you start factoring in depreciation, a lot of wells that looked like they were maybe breaking even, suddenly they're in the red.
And leases could start getting terminated left and right.
Exactly. That's why everyone in the Oklahoma oil patch was watching this case very closely.
So, what did the Oklahoma Supreme Court decide?
Well, they ultimately agreed with the Court of Appeals.
They said depreciation had to be included.
They said depreciation of that essential production equipment has to be included when you're deciding if a lease is producing in paying quantities.
Wow, that's a big deal. So why do they feel so strongly about depreciation?
They made a solid economic argument. They pointed out that production equipment inevitably loses value over time. It's just physics. Ignoring that loss would give you a distorted view of whether production was actually economically viable.
So you can't just pretend the equipment stays shiny and new forever.
Right. They also argue that if you didn't count depreciation, lessees could hold on to leases just for speculation, even if the production itself wasn't actually profitable.
They were worried about leases being held for speculative purposes, not for actual production.
Exactly. But there's a nuance here. The court clarified that, yes, depreciation of production equipment is a must-have operating expense. However, the initial costs of drilling and setting up the well, that upfront investment, shouldn't be part of the paying quantities calculation.
So the initial investment to get the well going, that's separate. It's the ongoing decline in value of the equipment that matters.
Exactly. They drew a line between the initial capital investment and the ongoing costs of actually getting the oil and gas out of the ground.
That makes sense.
One of the key takeaways from this case is a quote from Justice Opala, who wrote the majority opinion. He said, and I quote, "Production must yield a return, however small, in excess of lifting expenses."
Meaning, it's not enough to just cover your day-to-day costs. You have to be making at least some profit, considering the decline in value of your equipment.
Right. And that quote really clarifies what they meant. Lifting expenses now have to include depreciation.
So that's a pretty clear statement.
Yeah. Oh, and one more thing. The court also made a point about the thereafter clause. They said a temporary stop in production doesn't automatically mean the lease is over. Courts need to look at the whole picture. Why did production stop? How long did it stop for? What steps were taken to get it going again?
So it's not a black and white situation. You don't just automatically terminate the lease if production dips for a bit.
Right. They basically set up a two-part test. First, you figure out profitability revenue minus all operating costs, including depreciation. If you're making a profit, even a tiny one, the lease probably continues. You're not, then you move on to the second step, which is looking at the reasons for any production gaps and whether it's fair to end the lease.
So they're balancing the economics with fairness?
Exactly. But it's important to remember, this wasn't a unanimous decision. Justice Barnes wrote a dissenting opinion, and he had some important counterpoints.
Oh, okay, so there was another perspective on this whole depreciation issue.
Yes. Justice Barnes argued that including depreciation would just make things way too complicated when trying to figure out if a well is profitable. He was worried that this added complexity could lead to leases being terminated too quickly. And he thought that went against the general legal preference in Oklahoma to avoid taking away property rights.
So he was concerned about operators losing their leases unfairly, especially in cases where the well was still producing something, even if the profit margin was slim.
Exactly. He basically said, look, if the well is producing and making money right now, why end the lease because of what happened in the past? He thought, as long as the well is covering its immediate operating expenses, the lease should stay active, and past ups and downs shouldn't automatically lead to termination.
He was also worried about the practicality of actually proving depreciation on oil field equipment, right?
Yeah, that was a concern too.
So it sounds like there's a fundamental disagreement here about priorities.
Definitely.
Is it more important to prevent leases from being held speculatively and to ensure true economic viability? Or should the focus be on encouraging continued production and avoiding lease termination, even if the profits are small?
That's the heart of it. The majority opinion prioritized making sure leases were held based on real long-term profitability. But the dissent put more emphasis on keeping those wells running and avoiding what they saw as overly technical and burdensome calculations that could lead to forfeiture.
So what impact did this ruling actually have? Did it change how things worked in the Oklahoma oil patch?
Oh, absolutely. Practically speaking, after this case, operators had to start including depreciation in their financial analysis for every well. And this meant that suddenly a lot of leases, especially those for older wells that weren't as efficient and had higher depreciation, were at risk of being labeled as unprofitable and potentially terminated.
So this case made the whole evaluation of marginal wells much more rigorous.
Absolutely. It raised the bar for paying quantities. It wasn't enough to just cover your daily expenses anymore. You had to account for that slow decline in the value of your equipment.
And what about the bigger legal picture? How did Stewart v. Amerada Hess influence how courts interpreted these habendum clauses in future cases?
Well, legally, it set a clear precedent. Stewart v. Amerada Hess said that figuring out paying quantities is more than just a simple math problem. profitability is key, but you also have to consider fairness and the specific reasons why production might have stopped. It wasn't a rigid formula where any dip below a certain profit level would automatically end the lease.
It's a more nuanced approach that looks at the bigger picture, right?
Exactly. The case is a perfect example of how courts look at the actual practical side of oil and gas production when they're interpreting contracts. It shows that even technical legal terms can have huge real-world consequences for everyone involved.
Okay, so let's sum this up for all our future energy lawyers out there. The core holding of Stewart v. Emirata Hess Corp. is this. The Oklahoma Supreme Court said that when you're figuring out if an oil and gas lease is producing enough to keep going, you have to include the depreciation of that essential production equipment as an operating cost. That was a game changer.
That's it, a game changer.
And understanding this case is crucial for anyone going into energy law. It shows how courts try to balance the interests of the landowner and the leaseholder, and how an economic principle like depreciation can have a big impact on how legal agreements are interpreted.
It's not just about the law, it's about the economics behind it.
Exactly.
And it shows how those seemingly tiny details can have a ripple effect on the whole industry.
Now, here's something for you all to think about.
Yep.
Just as Barnes, in his dissent, talked about how including depreciation makes things more complex. And he also mentioned Oklahoma's policy against taking away property rights. So where do you draw the line? How do you balance preventing leases from being held purely for speculation with ensuring that operators who are actually producing something, even if their profit margins were slim in the past, are treated fairly?
It's a tough question. How much weight should you give to past profitability when you're looking at the current state of a lease, especially considering how economic conditions change and equipment ages?
It's a fascinating question, and this case gives us a glimpse into just how complex this area of law can be.
It really highlights the intersection of law, economics, and even accounting in the oil and gas world.
And on that note, join us next time when we'll explore how other states handle these tricky questions of lease termination and the prudent operator standard.
Always a hot topic in oil and gas.
We hope you found this deep dive into Stewart v. Emirata Hess Corp. insightful. It's definitely a case that will stay with you as you move forward in your legal careers.
And for anyone interested in oil and gas law, this is just the tip of the iceberg.
Absolutely. There's a whole world of fascinating cases and legal principles to discover.
Until next time.